Coming up on Tech News Today, Windows 8 gets launchy, SwiftKey gets swipey, and your smartphone is dirty. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, October 25th, 2012, Windows 8 Eve. Tech News Today is brought to you by American Express Bank FSB, offering a high-yield savings account, the perfect complement to help you reach your savings goals. To learn more and open an account online, visit personalsavings.com/online savings, member FDIC. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphones. Find out what your gadget is worth and get cash to upgrade to the latest iPhone at gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt, still wearing a Giants hat because I lost a bet.
I'm Sarah Lane. The Giants won last night, so I'm in a really good mood.
I'm Aya Zaktar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we keep you up to date on all the tech news in the world, starting with the top 10 stories of the day in the News Fuse. It's Windows 8 launch party day! The new operating system and the Microsoft Surface tablet and loads of new Windows 8 devices from third parties all launch tonight. And Microsoft has live streams and events going on all day long. Windows 8 will be available for download to upgrade existing PCs in more than 140 markets, 37 languages from windows.com/buy starting tonight at 12:01 a.m. local time. So the people on the East Coast are going to get it first. And at retail locations around the world.
The final $1 billion sale of Instagram to Facebook will sit in Facebook accounting as $521 million. Hey, wait, why? How'd that happen? Well, it's $300 million in cash that Facebook promised if the sale went through, plus 12 million vested shares of Class B common stock, although those go to non-employee stockholders, probably investors, not actually the staff. What's the staff get? 11 million unvested shares. Those shares will vest over a three-year period, which of course means that they have a big incentive to stay at Facebook for a while. Those have an aggregate fair value of $194 million. So Facebook's final payment for Instagram totals $715 million. Not a billion, but still a lot.
What a steal. Carphone Warehouse made the LG Nexus 4 available for pre-order. The device's specs were listed as a 4.7-inch display with a 1.5 gigahertz quad-core Qualcomm Snapdragon S4 processor, along with 8 gigabytes of onboard storage, but no micro SD option. Delivery would have been October 30th. The pre-order page is now gone, which makes plenty of sense considering this phone hasn't been officially announced yet.
Yeah, this is quickly like the worst kept secret in in Nexus history, I think.
You can order it.
I know.
I just think it's great that there's still a company, successful one, called Carphone Warehouse.
Yeah.
That's
good on
awesome.
You, Carphone Warehouse.
Keep on keeping on.
Don't change that name ever. The United States International Trade Commission has ruled that Samsung infringed on 4 Apple patents involving multi-touch, audio, and display technologies. Administrative law judge Thomas Pender issued the ruling, which could lead to a product ban, as usual. The decision is subject to a review by the full ITC commission, and Samsung intends to ask for a review.
The most advanced consumer TV on the market is ready for your wallet. It's made by LG. It's the very first TV to be sold as Ultra HD, and you're going to love the price.
What is it? What
just
is it?
$20,000. Perfect for the holiday season. This, of course, is the same technology referred to as 4K because it has a horizontal resolution of around 4,000 pixels. The tech offers resolutions that are nearly 4 times greater than current 1080p technology that all the peons use.
peons.
It's time to sell everything you own for $20,000. Wow. Okay, one of the best things about Android is you get to choose your keyboard. SwiftKey has just added gesture support so you can type in words by dragging your finger from key to key, which is a lot like swipe. SwiftKey's version, which it calls SwiftKey Flow, adds real-time prediction. It's going to be available for public beta in a few weeks.
Here's a hint why Nintendo revised their fourth quarter earnings down. Nintendo confirmed it will take a loss on every Wii U it sells. Nintendo president Satoru Iwata told investors that the Wii U hardware will have a negative impact on Nintendo's profits early after launch. The Wii U goes on sale November 18th in North America for $299. They make it up on selling games later.
Pocket, the save and get caught up on articles later company, formerly known as Read It Later, has released a Mac app. The company was founded in 2007, says it has over 6 million users, already has Android, iOS, Kindle Fire, and web apps as well. Pocket for Mac features offline access to saved content, syncing across devices, keyboard shortcuts, all sorts of good stuff. You can also now re-download an article if it hasn't loaded correctly, or report article view if something continuously fails to render.
Another money-losing quarter for Sprint. The U.S. mobile carrier announced a $767 million net loss and an operating loss of $231 million. The loss improved on the $629 million Q2 operating loss, but was about even with the $208 million lost in the same period last year. Churn, which is always a bad thing, increased from 1.69% to 1.88%. iPhones continued to sell at the same pace they have been, 1.5 million units this quarter. The SoftBank investment in Sprint did not affect this quarter's earnings, if you're wondering. After the announcement, Sprint unveiled new no-contract data plans for tablets. Remember, they're getting the iPad and the iPad Mini now.
Web host XS Networks will have to pay damages to Dutch anti-piracy group. Is it Brian?
Sure.
B-R-E-I-N. After a ruling by the Court of The Hague, XS Networks hosted torrent site SumoTorrent. Now, the anti-piracy agency requested personal information about the site's owner and for the site to be taken down. XS Networks refused. Those actions were found to be unlawful by the court as a facilitated copyright infringement.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by American Express Bank, FSB. Think about all the ways that you need to save your money. You're saving your money. I hope you've got some money to save. It's important to be disciplined about putting away even a small portion, even if you don't make that much. Some of us keep a portion of what we earn in a bank, save it for a down payment on a home, maybe a car, college, and hopefully you're able to set aside a little bit for an unexpected emergency. Well, whatever your goals for saving are, American Express Personal Savings High Yield Savings Account gives you a competitive variable interest rate to help you reach your savings goal. And you can easily link this savings account to your existing bank accounts, which means you don't have to switch banks to try it out. It's no risk. You should never say no risk involved with financial. It's no commitment. You don't have to cancel your current bank. You don't have to have any kind of fees. It's a great complement to your existing financial tools. And you can transfer money easily depending on your needs and keep track of your balance by phone or web 24/7. No minimums, no fees. Great phone support whenever you want to talk to someone. Just add the American Express Personal Savings High Yield Savings Account. It's an FDIC-insured account offered by American Express Bank FSB, and take control of your finances today. Head on over to personalsavings.com/online savings to learn more. And while you're there, open that account. No minimums, no fees, no need to switch your bank. All you need to do is get started today. That's a high yield savings account at personalsavings.com/online savings from American Express Bank FSB, member FDIC. All right, let's bring in the man himself, the frog of pants, the Duke of the Instance, Mr. Scott Johnson. Welcome to Tech News Today. Thank you for joining us.
Well, hello, Tom, Ayaz, and Sarah. It's great to be back. I haven't been on Twit since last week when me and the lovely and talented Sarah Lane did iPad Today, which I had a ball with, and I've never really publicly thanked her for that other than when we were on the show. So thanks for that again, Sarah, and it's just good to be back. I love being on with you guys. It was fun.
I mean, don't tell anybody, but I think Scott Johnson's actually pretty smart.
He is, yeah.
Don't tell anybody, especially with the
please
microphone.
Don't tell anybody.
It'll just be between the four of us.
All right. It's our little secret. Well, it is Windows 8 Day. You having a good Windows 8 Day so far, everybody?
So far, so good.
Windows 8-mas Eve. Microsoft doing stuff all day long. And Steve Ballmer out there making some bold promises.
Yeah, first we had Windows 8. We have a launch event. It was live streamed by Microsoft, and a lot of live blogs going on.
Still going on. The Surface one starts in like 20 minutes.
Yeah, there's going to be another press announcement at 10:30. Now, Steven Sinofsky, and some highlights of the actual event. Steven Sinofsky trying to explain Windows RT, explaining it's going to work with your printers. Because this is what people,
I heard that part.
Was that something that people were really worried about?
Device support
it's
in particular.
It's always a big deal, yeah.
But because that was a Vista flaw, that it didn't work with devices. He mentioned that 420 million hardware devices will work with Windows RT. Storage, displays, printers. They did a bunch of demos with tablets and ARM tablets and Ultrabooks. I thought this was a really cool feature. Windows 8 reconnects to Wi-Fi in 1 second. So when you open up your laptop, you're connected like that. Then they talked about their partnerships. And Wired summed up everything in their live blog by saying, wow, that's really it. There's no news. So that was the...
Yeah.
It was a live stream for about an hour and a half where nothing new was shown other than maybe those little points that I might have missed about reconnecting to Wi-Fi.
This whole thing today is a way to get people to know, hey, Windows 8's out. We're excited about it. We're proud of it. It's not a press conference. I know it's a press event, but Microsoft never said we're going to make any announcements. Unlike Monday when they said we're going to have a Windows Phone launch event and we're actually going to announce some new stuff.
Yeah, it looked like they just wanted to show they had a ton of hardware with them ready to go. Steve Ballmer doing some press work with the BBC saying, this is, I think, the most interesting part of the Windows stories. Is it fair to say we're going to do more hardware? Obviously, we are. Where we see important opportunities to set a new standard, yeah, we'll dive in. That's a quote right there. So
that doesn't really say anything either, though.
They're going to continue to make hardware?
Well, he says all sorts of stuff, right? He says, yeah, obviously, we're going to make more hardware. He doesn't give any dates. He doesn't give any details. That seems like a little bit of a throwaway, sure, believe in us type of a thing.
You think that Microsoft saying publicly, the head of Microsoft saying that we're going to continue making hardware won't scare the other partners that they have into, I don't know, backing away from that really expensive license? Because Steve Snoff's like, oh, 670 million licenses for Windows 7. Who wants to pay that when you could get some other operating system for free? It just seems like a bizarre thing.
I just think
this
is the sort of thing that you say because you wanted to be really clear that you stand behind the product that's about to launch. It's going to be a success. Obviously, if it's a success, you'll do more of them. If he said something like, is it fair to say we're going to do more hardware? I don't know. This weekend will really be telling. Maybe. Check back on Monday. That would be
also
sort of silly.
What free operating system are you talking about? Because Android requires a license fee.
There's Linux.
Yeah.
But you can customize
on your phone?
Crazy. On your phone. It's a thing. You could have Android. You could have lots of different versions of things out there. There's Migo and Tizen and ridiculous whatever names there are. But I'm just saying that with Microsoft, the head of Microsoft, it was one thing when it was just speculation. When you got this guy
Android
saying,
is Linux,
we're now going to do this. We're going to make our own devices. And effectively, they're saying they're going to make a phone. I mean, what other hardware is there? Phones and desktops?
I think they're scaring them straight. I think what they're doing is saying, look, we made the Surface because you guys weren't making good tablets that caught people's eyes. And so we did a lot of the work for you. And I think this is what's going on behind the scenes a little bit. Microsoft is telling his partners, look, you can use a lot of what we did in the Surface. We're not going to sue you if you mimic stuff, right? We'll license it to you on really friendly terms because you're getting a license for Windows 8. So unlike if someone like Samsung imitates the iPad, you might be going to court. If someone imitates the Surface that's a partner with Microsoft, they're free and clear. So it saves them some work. I think what Microsoft's saying is, look, if you guys don't come out with some compelling phones here, we might have to do the same thing in Windows Phone.
Scott, I'm kind of curious what you think about this whole thing. Also, HP's Meg Whitman saying, I'm not worried about the Surface at all. It doesn't work like a laptop. It doesn't have a keyboard. You can't work on it. So other hardware partners are like, yeah, you guys can make hardware all you want. We actually make laptops. You guys make some little tablet. What do you think of what's going on?
All right. So it's really interesting, right, to see Microsoft in this position, this model they've relied on since the early 90s, which is we're going to make the software and you're all going to make the hardware and we're just going to license it to you. And for that cost of licensing, you're going to have, you know, the ability to do whatever you want on the hardware. And we're not going to bug you about that. We're going to try to be compatible as we can be. But really, it's all about that. So this is really the first, maybe not the first time, but the first time where they've made such a big deal out of a new product line that is based on their own hardware or hardware they're having manufactured with their own name on it. And it changes that model that everybody has been used to from, you know, Windows 3.1 up. And they're not used to this change. And so it's, to me, that's the kind of the more interesting overlying thing here is that we are seeing Microsoft shift completely from one business model and how they do OS to a very different one. It may be similar in a lot of ways, but in one very, very big way is they're saying, well, look, for us to compete in this world where if Google makes a device or if Apple makes a device, it makes this huge splash. We are living in a time where we need to be able to own some of that. We need to have a piece of that innovation, that excitement. And that's what they're going to do. And it also speaks to your earlier comments about, you know, they do a press launch or you know, a press event where they don't really say anything. Well, this iOS has been in the hands of beta testers and developers for months now. They all know what the thing is. They're not going to be able to show us anything new, but they need to start building around their products this facade of sort of excitement, you know, surprises, the things that they're sort of getting beat at by Apple, Google, and others. And so I'm not, you know, all that surprised to see them behaving in this way, but it's going to be more painful for them because Apple's always made their own hardware and didn't like giving it to anyone else. And that clone thing was a huge failure and it wasn't even under Steve Jobs. So Ballmer and company have to figure out how to transition from being just the software guys to this brave new space where they're going to have to compete with their own licensees. And it's weird. It's just a weird time for Microsoft.
I think one of the things I've noticed over the past couple of years, a lot of these hardware manufacturers have gone into software because they've been tinkering with Android a bit. So there's a lot more software development like at Samsung, more software development at HTC, and other companies that you didn't normally think of as software companies. But if they were going to make laptops or tablets or anything, and they go, wait a second, we have a software team. We can just skin our own thing and put a windowed operating system over something. Effectively, people use the browser anyway. How hard could it be to switch over? I just think the industry is in flux right now, so it's kind of hard to tell where it's
going to
go. But
yeah, we're going back to the future. Because remember, it used to be if you bought a piece of hardware, you got the software that company made. Commodore 64, TI-99, it was Microsoft that kind of changed things by coming out with Windows and saying, we're not going to make hardware. So it's interesting to see it circle back. And I think it's just a cycle that the industry goes through because there are advantages to having that vertical, chain, as you were saying, and there's advantages to being independent. And Google is doing that with Android, saying we're not going to actually make the hardware ourselves. Forget Motorola. They're firewalled off from us. Otherwise, we're not going to be making any hardware ourselves. Speaking of pain, which we were briefly, Sprint lost less money than last quarter, about the same operating loss as the year before. They lost more money than the year before overall. Though a lot of those costs, though, were related to Network Vision, write-down costs. The Nextel shutdown still costing them money. Churn, though, is the real bad news here. Churn is the loss of subscribers, gain of subscribers. Churn increased to 1.88%, up from 1.69% in Q2. That may not sound like a lot to you, but it's going the wrong direction. And you want it less than 1% if you're a carrier. Suffered a net customer decline of 456,000 people or subscribers in the third quarter. Dan Hess continued to dismiss the idea of shared data plans, though. In his post-earnings call press conference or analyst Q&A session, he said, no, we're not going to do shared data plans. We're unlimited. We're going to stay unlimited. That's what you get when you get a phone. However, immediately after that, Sprint did announce new no-contract data plans to accompany the iPad and iPad Mini to Sprint. $14.99 for 300 megabytes of data per month, ranging all the way up to 12 gigabytes of data for $80. So no unlimited on your tablet. You got to pay per gigabyte. However, they're saying no activation fees for new customers. These are a saving over the Verizon plans for sure, up to 20% savings versus the Verizon plans. It's interesting when you compare them to AT&T. At 3 gigabytes, it's actually cheaper to get AT&T's tablet plan. But as you add more gigabytes, it gets cheaper to do Sprint. And in fact, AT&T maxes out at 5 gigabytes. That's all you can get, whereas Sprint gives you up to 12.
And what's the 5 gigabyte plan for AT&T? Do you
5 gigabyte plan, if I remember right, for AT&T is $35 and for Sprint's $30 or something like that.
Okay. So it's more than double that for... Yeah, that makes sense. I don't know. I use a tablet with data constantly. I mean, I'll use Wi-Fi when it's available, but when I go to the gym, they don't have a Wi-Fi network that's very good. And so it's just nice to be able to take it with me everywhere and never have to worry about
Sprint is $50 for 6 gigabytes or $35 for 3 gigabytes. And AT&T is $50 for 5 gigabytes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, so this looks like a more attractive price, especially if you think you're going to be using more data and you want to make sure that you're paying for the appropriate plan. I don't know. I mean, I say this all the time. I know people say Wi-Fi only works just fine, but it is limiting. It's nice to be able to have a plan where your data is covered and you can use it everywhere, and you don't have to worry about stupid Wi-Fi networks not working.
If you're going to go with an iPad that has a connection, if you're going to have any tablet, I don't see why you'd go to Sprint. I know that the prices are nicer, but the thing is, their coverage area is nothing like Verizon. I mean, AT&T's got, they claim, the fastest network. Verizon's got the biggest coverage area. Sprint might be the best deal, assuming you have it in your area. And by the time Sprint shows up in New York and San Francisco, I think that's next year, there'll be a new iPad again. So, you'll have this thing that you can't use on their network, on their fastest network.
You could use it on 3G, but yeah, I get you.
If you want to do 3G, then that's a... I have a hard time going back. I had an LTE device. I'm not going back to 3G. And there's even if Sprint has this attractive deal... It's like, well, your coverage area is still your Sprint.
Yeah, you certainly have to weigh the options.
Sprint's big thing is we're unlimited and their tablets aren't. Go ahead, Scott.
If I was just going to say that very thing, if that tablet was unlimited, I would seriously consider it. In fact, that would be enough for me to go, maybe I can justify the new Mini because I really want to try that thing out. But I don't want to go, you know, pay for another data plan, or I don't want to get an existing one and have it be limited and cap it with all the devices I have on it. I would totally consider Sprint if these were unlimited. As bad as their coverage is and as bad as their speed can be, I still think that's, right now in the current market, it's an advantage to say we have unlimited data. Those other two guys don't. And that would probably be enough for me, and I'm sure others.
Yeah, it's a good thing that Sprint's getting the iPad. It was a good thing that Sprint got the iPhone. But as you can see, neither one of these things is a panacea. It's not solving everything. They need to get LTE out there. It's going to take a while to do it. The thing that's going to save Sprint is that SoftBank money that's coming. It's not part of this quarterly earnings report. So when they get that SoftBank money, that SoftBank support, and that leverage, none of these carriers can turn very quickly, but that's certainly going to help it. Let's talk about that keyboard we mentioned in NewsFuse. I use the SwiftKey keyboard on my Nexus 7 here, and they're getting all swipey.
Yeah, in fact, specifically, there's a company called Swipe that Nuance now owns, Swipe with a Y rather than an I, that had introduced a way to use your keyboard on the go to be able to write really quickly. That's a combination of predictive text and... it's almost like a, gosh, I don't even know what you call it. It almost looks like you're making some sort of star constellation where if I want to type the word Tom, it's T, and then I go over to the O. And then once that trajectory from O moves away, then the keyboard knows, oh, you meant O. So it's, I'm sort of doing this kind of a thing rather than actually typing out words. So it's supposed to be just a better way to not only type on a small mobile device, but to type quickly and smartly. This is a video that Swipe had put out that shows how it works on phones and tablets. But SwiftKey...
That's SwiftKey, actually.
Yeah, this is SwiftKey.
Are you sure? I think that's the Swipe video. The SwiftKey one is above it.
The thing just said introducing SwiftKey.
Oh, okay. Okay, I'm not exactly sure which one you're looking at. There were... Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. So, yeah, the top one is SwiftKey, and then the bottom one is actually a video of Swipe that's playing at the same time. Yeah, this is... if we had the music up, which we really shouldn't because it's very obnoxious, it's like a hardcore dubstep music over some just fairly innocuous typing. Yeah. But, yeah, so you get the idea of this. And, obviously, this person is pretty well-versed, so it shows what something... like SwiftKey or Swipe, which works exactly the same way, would look like if you're pretty good at it and you're pretty used to it. But it's very cool. What's interesting is that SwiftKey says, this is our technology. We've patented it, and it's called Flow. It's very, very similar to what Swipe's got going. I'm not exactly sure what specific patents SwiftKey has. Whatever they're claiming remains to be seen, because they're definitely extremely similar. But it's really cool. What it does is it has a word prediction engine, which is looking at SMSs and emails, your communication via social media, all sorts of stuff, to get smarter about what sort of things you're probably typing. You know, if it's a word that's like, well, we're halfway through the word, Sarah's probably meaning this word because it's something that she uses a lot, rather than some random word. They say the system is correct 30% of the time for next words before any characters are even entered. 84% of the next words after two characters have been entered. And, of course, it gets smarter over time as it knows a little bit more about your patterns. But more so, I wonder how upset Swipe is about this. This is something that was, I guess you could say, unique to Swipe for a pretty short amount of time.
There have been other keyboards that do this kind of gesture thing. Swipe's just the best of them. So it's not like Swipe is the only one who existed that did this, right?
Yeah, I think that Swipe may have been one of the first to kind of bring it out. So they end up kind of, you know, getting the kind of crown of, hey, we did it first. I'm curious to know how, like, what the differentiator there is then, if SwiftKey was able to get a patent around this, or is the patent more directed towards the word prediction, which has been their strong suit.
That is my understanding from reading between the lines here, is that what SwiftKey says is we're really good at predictive.
Yes,
that's the whole point of SwiftKey on Android. I mean, when I use it on here, what it does as you're typing, it suggests, let's see if I can type something here. It usually, it's not doing it right now. It usually suggests.
It's just nervous.
It's on the spot.
Here, I can put up.
It usually suggests words up there at the top. You can see it. And then you can say, oh, I don't need to finish typing that word. I can just click on the word. Right. So what they're saying is, because we're really good at predicting, sometimes before you even type what your next word is going to be, our swipey type thing is not about being swipey. It's about being able
integrating
to understand what you're swiping.
Yes, exactly. And allowing you to kind of click to that word before you even complete it. Definitely its strong suit.
Now, Swiftkey says we've had around 10 million downloads to date. They've been around since 2008 or so. 44 languages are covered. And both of these companies have a business selling software to OEMs. Swipe, the competitor to SwiftKey, the biggest one anyway, says their largest market is being preloaded onto devices mostly. The large majority of those are Android devices. Of course, iOS devices are totally out of this because Apple doesn't allow any third-party app to make changes to the built-in keyboard. So as far as I'm concerned, we're not going to see anything cool like this on iOS. But I love this. I think it's a... it's a little strange, but then again, typing on a mobile device is weird. So if it makes it easier to go more quickly, if I've got to be writing an email out to somebody, I just want to get it over with. And if there's not too hard of a learning curve with this, I think it's pretty exciting.
I have a general fear of keyboard changing. So like when people try to convince me the ABCD, you know, keyboard, whatever it's called, as opposed to the QWERTY keyboard was the way to go. I remember just going, I can't freaking do this. What is this? What is this business I'm being presented with? And I feel the same way anytime I see things like this. I see that and go, ooh, that's kind of innovative and awesome. But I don't know if I'm ready to unlearn this business and move on to that thing. And that says way more about me than the technology, clearly. But I foresee a day. I mean, in the old phone days, or I shouldn't say old phone days, but when you had a flip phone before smartphones were dominant, and you'd see kids text at lightning speed using, you know, stupid 10-key routine.
T9.
Predictive,
yeah.
Crap. T9, yeah. It was ridiculous what they could do and how quickly they could do it. I had, at the time, a 12-year-old daughter who could out-text anybody I knew using that method. So it isn't to say that we, and certainly young minds, can't grasp these new things. But for whatever reason, when anybody talks about a new keyboard, even Microsoft's old split ergonomic nightmare keyboard thing that so many people love, and they still make stuff like that, I can't do it. I can't even look at those without thinking, no, you cannot change where my Q and my T's are. And I just can't deal with it. So I'm clearly not the target for stuff like this.
I mean, swipe seemed to make a lot more sense in these kinds of styles when it was on a small phone. Like when you had like a little 3-inch device or 3.5-inch. But as your device is getting larger, something like the Nexus, when you're starting to drag your finger around, it's starting to take up a lot of space. And it's not going to be, at least I found, not as quick as just thumb typing for me. So like it seems really nice when you have a small device. But when you have these larger, everything's getting larger anyway. It doesn't seem like this is a draw to me at all, other than the predictive part. Then again, I have to train every keyboard with my name, which takes a very long time. So if they can make that faster, I might be more likely to go to them.
All right, let's take a quick break. Thank our other sponsor for today's show, Gazelle. You want to get one of these new Nexuses that's being leaked out? You want to get an iPad on Sprint? You want to get any kind of new device? You're going to need some cash. And one way to get some cash is get rid of those old devices you're not going to need anymore when you get your new device. Gazelle, believe me, is the simplest way I have come across to sell your old gadgets. You got an iPad, you got an iPhone, this is the place to go. MacBooks too. I've sold a MacBook on there as well. You just go to Gazelle, GAZELLE.com. You click on the picture. How simple is that? And you say, this is my iPhone. Which iPhone is it? Oh yeah, it's that one. It looks like the 4S. That's the one I have. I have it on AT&T. And then you answer a couple of things about the condition, what kind of storage you have, and Gazelle will give you an offer. You lock that offer in for 30 days. You got 30 days to think about if you really want to sell the gadget, but lock it in now. Go do it right now, even if you're not sure you want to sell, because the offer is probably not going to get larger over time, right? So lock that in for 30 days. When you're ready to sell it, print out a shipping label, get free shipping, send it to Gazelle. They'll send you cash by PayPal or by check. So they actually don't send you cash in the mail. That would be unsafe. They send it to you by PayPal or by check. Gazelle.com. Take a minute. Go there. Find out what your old gadgets are worth. Sell your iPhone today at Gazelle.com. And I thank them for making me several $100s this summer as I was cleaning out my garage and getting rid of stuff. And, of course, for their support of Tech News Today. We got TVs. TVs are raining down from the heavens. We talked about the LG TV in the news feed, so there are a bunch of other announcements today.
TVs raining from the heavens.
And they're gigantic.
Huge.
They're big.
There's a couple of ultra-high-def TVs. LG's got the 84-inch $20,000 TV. 20K buys you 4K. Then there's Sony's 84-inch UHD TV coming next month for $25,000. But if you want to like think about what's coming up really soon, or maybe what's more affordable, there's some smart TV news out there right now. Turns out, according to WebOS Nation, LG is working with Graham, they're like the successor to Palm, to build a new smart TV. Now, apps for YouTube, Pandora, and Netflix are going to be rebuilt using the Enyo framework. And apparently this is because LG is not a fan of working with Google when it comes to Google TV. This is expected to be seen in CES 2013, so that's going to be kind of interesting. But right now, if you want to upgrade your Samsung TV, you could do that. Amazon's Instant Video app is now available, and it's going to run on Samsung's 2012 smart TVs. And Samsung's saying they have a new interface. It kind of looks like the Xbox dashboard. So if you like that big tiled look, you have that. And it's supposed, I think you're supposed to be able to still do that, start on your Fire and continue on your television. And then if you want to just think about regular old 1080p TVs, or the 1080p peons, as you called it, Sarah.
How could that possibly be interesting?
It's going to be super exciting, thanks to Sharp's new, I love saying this, Aquos Quattron 3D XL TV.
What?
That's its real name. Wow. I'm not making that up. The hook right now is something called Sharp's MothEye technology, which is supposed to allow for bright colors, high contrast, and a lot less glare. So, you know, big, shiny screens, but you don't have to have that with this. 1080p version, 1080p television. Several different models coming out in Japan and not no pricing or availability in the States yet. So any of these crazy TVs make you want to like just throw out your old one and get a brand new 84-inch UHD TV, another smart TV, a MothEye, anybody?
Yeah, totally. I've got a 55-inch TV and there's nothing wrong with it. So it's like I'm not actually in the market for a TV because I don't have a good excuse. But the wall that it's on, I mean, it could... If I had an 80-inch TV, I would be the envy of everyone in my building. It would be really cool. I love the idea of this. And 1080p, quite honestly, is working fine for me. So a big old TV that's got some MothEye technology that makes colors a little bit better sounds great.
How much? The price is not available. Exactly. That's the only hang-up I have on that one.
Yeah, the pricing isn't available yet. But I think 80 inches on a 1080p TV, you might start noticing things unless you start sitting very, very far back. The UHD TV stuff to me is way more interesting because it does passive 3D way better than any television could do right now. So if you wanted to not have the clicking of your glasses.
But I'm not rolling in dough like Scott Johnson. I can't afford $20,000.
Would you do frog pants? Can you get yourself a bunch of these?
Well, right now I'm sitting in a pile of that money Tom's talking about, and I'm rubbing it on myself as we do the show here. I'm interested. I mean, as always, I'm interested in new tech and cool new stuff. And I hate the term ultra because then what do you call it after that? What are 8K is going to be called? Are you going to have a new name for that? I mean, ultra sort of ends up being, if it's the ultra one, what is, you know, the ultimate is, and it'll just stay being a U. I hate that. But anyway, those are cool, but there's no content yet. And there's no standard for a new disc format that will most likely have to be the way we launch into that era of 4K TV. Cause you're not going to be able to do it. At least the current bandwidth rates aren't going to allow for 70 gig, you know, streams and downloads for gigantic films running in 4K. So I still have all these issues about, the content isn't going to be there, just like it was never there for 1080p for a very long time. So will it catch up? Absolutely. But by then, these TVs won't be 20K. They'll be down around Costco price, and I can go look at them. They're exciting to me, though, and that's really cool. What's more exciting to me these days is current tech, 1080p tech stuff, but as thin as you can freaking make that thing. The thinner they get, the more interested I am. So I want stuff that looks like it's, you know, laminated to the wall and not, you know, hung there. That's way more interesting. And maybe these Sharps are, you know, getting into that territory. But I like thin.
Yeah, you know, I'm happy with my current Panasonic Viera. I know it's a few years old, 50 inches. You know, it's not the biggest one you can get, but looks good, works well. Till it breaks, I don't know. You're going to have to do something pretty crazy and pretty cheap to get me to dive in.
I have a hard time.
3D wasn't it, was it?
3D definitely not.
3D is not even, I mean, I don't even, that doesn't even factor into some sort of a buy-in purchase for me.
I think I watch TV.
Just not interested.
I watch TV way too much to like want anything this large. Because I'll just run things like on Hulu on my laptop or something. Because there's no reason to watch really crappy television on an 84-inch television. Because that's going to eat up a lot of power. It's really big and high res, and maybe I can have four things up at once, so I can watch a lot of crap at one time. But I'm just gonna veg out all day. So I don't think.
But
it's
you're
a great
the one
idea.
Who's always talking about Blu-ray. When things don't have Blu-ray, you get upset because you like the quality.
Oh yeah, I can watch
and he
that.
He likes to live in the past.
I can watch that. That's the time when I should use a TV like this. But yeah. I would run it all the time, and I know I'd have an electric bill that'd be huge.
All right, a couple more stories to talk about real quickly. New York Times had their earnings report. That's not an obvious thing for us to cover, but digital subscriptions are. New York Times is sort of the bellwether. They're the canary in the coal mine to a lot of people in the industry, whether you can successfully take a business from the old print model to the new digital model. Mixed results. ad sales dropped 8.9% last quarter, but circulation revenue climbed 7.4%. Now, some of that was from charging more for print copies. They actually got more money out of fewer subscribers to print. But they also have 600,000 people paying for digital subscriptions, and that's up 11%. So New York Times doing the paywall right. In fact, I almost never run into the paywall. I ran into it for the first time since they instituted the new thing yesterday. It said, oh, you've seen 10 articles so far this year, so you need to subscribe. And I just opened Opera. I was like, all right, well, I'll just open a new browser where you don't have a cookie set. And it was fine. And so you might say, well, see, that's not going to work. But up 11%, people still willing to pay for it.
Well, okay, so their print model is dwindling, right? So they have fewer customers who are paying regularly for the Times.
But they're making more money off them. They're willing to continue to pay for it.
Because they're charging. Yeah. It's like they're saying, if you're a loyal New York Times reader, I can actually raise the price a little bit, and you're loyal enough so that you'll just continue to pay it.
Yeah.
And maybe you're going to convert over to a digital model, and that's fine because you're going to have to pay for that too. I think they're deciding to be smart with the people that they've got left. They're not really introducing a business model that's going to attract new people.
But apparently it is. Digital subscriptions up 11%.
But print subscriptions are down. But so I think that's more of a conversion.
That's just the way of the times, in my opinion. You're going to have fewer print subscribers over time, and you need to have digital subscribers go up. And the amount of money they made off of subscribers in general went up. So that's all positive. It's the ad sales that caused them to lose any money.
It's a slow and steady wins the race kind of situation, it seems like to me. They're not going to do any rash things. They're going to slow as print does what print's going to do. They'll figure out ways to maximize that over time. And then as digital, you know, creeps large, they'll try to be ready for that. To me, this is the model. This is how people should be behaving. They should be able to see this as a way to do it. Don't be rash. Don't do crazy crap. Just let the market do what it's going to do and be ready to ride whatever wave it takes.
And it also shows the market's ready to pay for content that you could get for free. You could switch your browser. You could do other things. But sometimes you're like, I like the New York Times. They research everything. I know I don't have to go, is this source true? Is this really? You're more likely to believe the Times over other people, I guess, or other sites. So at least you're paying for quality. And so if the fact that a paywall actually worked without them shutting out people or without them removing themselves from Google and all kinds of bizarre things.
Yeah, without
like other
acting punitive.
Right. It seems like, okay, well, there's nothing wrong with going, oh, I'll pay you a buck for that. It's not a big deal.
Yeah. In fact, I hesitated. I was like, maybe I should pay and just, you know, and get access to all the extra cool stuff that they give you when you pay. But I realized, well, you know what? I almost never run across this 10 article limit. So until I run across it a bunch, maybe I'll hold off. But obviously, a lot of other people still willing.
I mean, I subscribe to the New York Times. Yeah, I think it's a great publication. I'm the sort of person that they know they've still got. I mean, unless they raise the prices to the point where I'm insulted, I will pay a little bit more.
And I think the fact that they're losing money, and it's mostly because of ad sales, is a temporary problem. As much as the economy being bad is a temporary problem, if we all think the economy will be bad forever, then they're screwed. But if the economy recovers, that ad money starts to come
back. New York Times gifts. It's a new strategy. Money everywhere.
Facebook buying New York Times.
A news feed. There you go.
All right. Finally, Wall Street Journal running what I consider to be the dirty keyboard story of the modern age of this decade. Are smartphones making you sick?
Well, yes. According to Jeffrey Kane, he's the president of the American Academy of Family Physicians and chief of family medicine at Children's Hospital in Colorado, says, yeah, smartphones, they've got this proximity to your ears, your nose, and your mouth. And guess what? It's a haven for bacteria. Who would have thunk it? There's some pretty gross statistics. A lab, there was a 8 randomly selected phones were tested in a lab from a Chicago office for the article that was written in the Wall Street Journal. The phones didn't show any signs of E. coli or the staph bacteria, but they did all 8 of them show abnormally high numbers of coliforms, which is a bacteria indicating fecal contamination. Ew, gross, disgusting. People are taking their phones into the bathrooms. Actually, they are.
Yeah.
They're part of the problem. But you could say that about a book, too. I mean, these are the sorts of articles when they're written, it's like, yeah, that's just kind of gross. And I feel like I cringe a little bit and say, yeah, bacteria, things that you touch a lot, that you put up to your face on a regular basis, that aren't as clean as they should be. Yeah, well, doorknobs aren't very clean either. I mean, what's...
There are 10 times more bacterial cells in your body than human cells.
I mean, bacteria. You can't get rid of bacteria. You can't possibly. It's good to wash your hands. Good to have a hand sanitizer here and there. I think the bigger question is like, okay, well, maybe you have a really, really dirty phone, right? And, you know, your family's getting pink eye 3 times a summer. It's something really awful. Like, well, no, I mean, it's like if you have a problem with bacteria, then what do you do? And the interesting thing is that the phone makers, you have to be careful with the kind of cleaning solution that you're, you know, you can't just pour whatever on a phone. It's going to scratch the glass or it's going to take off some sort of resin coating and that sort of thing. Both BlackBerry and Apple say in their kind of manufacturing notes, don't use window cleaners, don't use household cleaners, don't use aerosol sprays, don't use solvents or alcohol or ammonia or abrasives. In the lab test, plain rubbing alcohol actually removed more germs than several types of cleaners, you know, brand name sort of stuff. So it's like, well, what do you do? I mean, you can't dunk it in water. So I think it's a matter of being really, really gentle with your phone or your tablet if you're holding it up to your face a lot.
This to me is a scare story.
Totally. Everyone's freaking out about meningitis right now in the U.S. And it's like, let's talk about horrible things that happen to you because bacteria, because reasons.
This is the exact... you know,
well put.
Pretty much. Tape at 10. Tune in at 11. Are bacteria killing you from your phone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't add anything to that because reasons. okay, randomizer. Time for randomizer. Do we want the Galaxy S3 sex ad or the DARPA humanoid robot that's creepy?
We're already doing dirty phones. So
I mean, you said sex. I'm intrigued.
All right. On to TheVerge.com where they have the article about the Galaxy S3 ad that is showing off the NFC tapping, right? You tap the two phones together.
Okay.
And so it starts. What's funny is I saw this ad with the sound off, and I still got it. It starts with her saying, like, hey, here's a picture of the kids for you to take with you. Then she leans into the cab as he's getting off to go to the airport. This is her husband. And says, here's a video of me.
Ew.
And he gets all flustered. And you know, the implication is that it is a video of her just, you know, probably reciting Shakespeare.
Did she also warn that the tap transferred the fecal contamination from her phone to his phone? Or?
Oh,
I didn't miss that.
Way to ruin the sexy night. Wow.
That's romance.
I mean, I'm more like, your kids are like crying in the background. No one's feeling this.
I mean,
this
seems very important, so she doesn't accidentally send it to the wrong person if you actually have to physically touch another device on the
Never
actual practical
record
side.
Record those videos on your phone. Have you learned nothing from Paris Hilton?
Well, obviously, this ad, they're reflecting the realities of the matter, right? This apparently is a very
She's
popular
probably assuming
thing.
Her husband isn't going to go sell that video to
Hackers.
TMZ.
Just saying.
Hackers.
Videos you don't want to come out anyway.
And now you can take them off with NFC. You can tap.
Right.
I'm not going to touch this.
NFC is totally secure. Mm-hmm. It's a near field communication. All right. Well,
every joke is inappropriate.
Parents.
Maybe we chose wisely.
Doing their thing.
Real quickly, I want to remind people that we have a Twit store where you can buy shirts, and we have a Twit Picks section at twit.tv/Amazon where you can find all the stuff we talk about. Things like on Before You Buy, you want that product, you want the Kindle Paperwhite, you don't know how to buy it. Go to twit.tv/Amazon. We compile all the stuff we talk about, not all the stuff, but the most popular stuff we talk about, including my book, Chronology of Tech History. That's why I'm selfishly promoting it. But you can also get a Logitech washable keyboard if you're worried about the bacteria. We talked about that on Before You Buy recently, the Kindle Paperwhite, Jabra Soulmate. Check it out, twit.tv/Amazon. Let's see what's on the calendar, Sarah.
Well, okay. As you were talking about product names being pretty awesome, I've got three good ones.
Go for it.
The Acer Iconia W700 Windows 8 tablet is launching for $799.99 tomorrow, October 26th.
What about the W800? It's $800. It's running Windows 8. It's W700.
Easy.
No, I don't know. Who? I mean, why? Why is there? Because reasons. The Sony Xperia TL is coming to AT&T on November 2nd for $99 with a 2-year contract. And the Panasonic Lumix GH3 launches on December 13th, although we don't have any information on the price as of yet.
Let's check what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Got lots of emails, lots of Twitter comments about our discussion of whether the new iPad with the new processor inside is a ripoff or not. Jeff Bacalar was saying it was. Sarah and I were making fun of him. It was all in good fun. Let me just say, some people are like, you were condescending and mean. Bacalar can take a joke. We were having fun with him, but there is a difference of opinion. Tim wrote in and said, just a quick view on the iPad 4 update from the UK perspective. It's not just a processor bump here. It's the new iPad also supports 4G LTE in the UK. The old new iPad didn't. Now it has both Everything Everywhere's network, which launches its LTE this month in limited cities, and the 3 network next year. It also provides LTE support in Australia. Remember those lawsuits about them having to drop 4G from the marketing of the iPad? Tim says, personally, I don't feel burnt since by the time LTE reached my town, the iPad 5 will probably be out. But he wanted to point out that there's overseas, from the United States anyway, there's an extra addition here with the new LTE support.
Yeah, The Verge pointed out the iPad 2 was actually quietly upgraded. The internals were. It was a more efficient processor, better battery life. They just didn't tell anybody. It was a slightly different model. So this is not that different.
Scott, did you feel burned by the fact they came out with a new version of the 10-inch iPad?
I might have if the change in Australia where they've added LTE after the fact in this newer revision, that suddenly becomes, oh, wow, now you got 3 features, one of them fairly major that is missing just 3-4 months ago, and you were telling me it was the greatest iPad ever made. But I got over it pretty quick. A faster chip, which is a relative jump. It's not as big a jump. I mean, they say double, but it's what you're going to get in a use case isn't going to be that big a deal. And the connector is not a big deal to me until I'm in the market for a new iPad. So it didn't really affect me all that much. What bugged me more was Phil Schiller, and I love him, all right? But Phil Schiller getting on stage and saying, look at this sweet new iMac. And then my head going, oh, I just bought a new one 2 months ago. Oh, well, this happens. You try to stay cutting edge. But, whatever. I like what I got. It'll be fine. Then Phil throws up the old iMac and says, look at the old revision. And now look at this new sweetness. And then makes this comment. Isn't it funny how new stuff like this makes crap like this look really old and lame? Or whatever. I'm paraphrasing.
As we can see in the video, the iMac right over your shoulder.
Yeah. It's like, here I am with, I just got a paper cut. Now he's rubbing lemon juice in it real hard.
You got a paper cut on that new thin iMac.
Yeah, that thing is totally sweet, but I didn't need Phil rubbing it in. Other than that, the iPad thing was, it's a little odd that they had this revision this quick. And it's also a little odd because I don't think they actually needed it. There wasn't much happening there that made me go, oh, well, thank goodness this quickly after we got a revision. It was an odd thing to do in the wake of everything else they were releasing that day or announcing that day. But I don't feel burned. I love my iPad and lightning can wait. Let's put it that way.
Look, if you don't turn your iMac to the side, no one will ever know it's not the new one. It's totally fine.
Good point. It's actually a very good
point. Just
carve
out a hole in the wall and put it into the wall, recess it, and then it'll be the flat with the wall, and no one will it'll be awesome.
Yeah. I do call it aluminium now, so
good.
I hope that helps. Yeah.
That fixes everything.
All right, I got another email from Mark who says, you guys might be interested to know that it appears the Droid Bionics on Verizon are getting their ice cream sandwich update. It's version 4.0.4, so they did push out the latest released version of ICS, not an early release. It's so far running smoothly. The update was smooth as well. I lost some icons off some of my screens, but not many. It's been the only negative that I've noticed. The lock screen has changed, but likely due to all the litigation that's been tossed about to slide to unlock patent and everything. So now it's a wheel where I move the unlock to the activity I want to do. It's a little odd, but I'll probably get used to it. Something also to note, Motorola added in a Tasker-style app called Smart Actions. Haven't played with it too much, but it appears to handle all of the same things that Tasker can. The only concern I have is that it can learn your patterns, which could be good or horribly, horribly wrong.
That's actually one of the things with SwiftKey that I have resisted turning on. Is it going to learn from Gmail and Twitter and RSS feeds about how, what your words are?
When I mentioned that earlier on the show, a couple people in chat were like, it's reading your life.
I know.
No, that's Skynet.
It's not on by default, by the way.
I think. You want it to be smart?
Not too smart.
Okay.
Not smarter than, it's not, that wouldn't be hard. That's it for this show. Thanks for everybody who's smart and submits to our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com. It's the place that we look to, along with all of our other sources, to find out what you would like us to talk about on each and every show. Top hot item right there, Samsung Galaxy S3 ad with the tapping. So there you go. We talked about it. Your votes were heard. TechNewsToday.reddit.com. Let us know what stories you'd like us to talk about. We definitely take a look at that. Scott Johnson, my friend, always good to have you on. BlizzCon coming up this weekend, eh?
Yeah, Saturday we're doing, for the Instance Show, which is our World of Warcraft show on the Frog Pants Network, is doing a 5-hour block of programming that is just dedicated to what we love about Blizzard and their games. And we've got experts from all the different games coming in. We're going to have live streams of gameplay and such after. Mainly, it's this big block of sort of audio MP3s, which you can get on the feed, but you can also watch it live on video. And we're going to talk about what's going on in StarCraft, what's going on in World of Warcraft, what's happening in Diablo. No BlizzCon this year. In fact, BlizzCon would have been this weekend. Chances are you and I might have been there.
Yep.
But they canceled it this year, so we thought, why not do something in its place? So that's happening this Saturday, starting at, I want to say, when did I tell people? 9 a.m. Pacific time, and that'll go till about, I think, 2 or 3 Pacific time. And we're really looking forward to it. It should be a lot of fun. People can find details for that at theinstance.net or at frogpants.com.
I think you have blizzgon.com too, don't you?
I do. Actually, they can go to blizzgon.com. It just resolves to a different page, but
yeah.
You'll get the schedule, at least so far. You'll get kind of the idea. I mean, we're not doing anything crazy fancy, but I am giving away a ton of crap. We got like board games and T-shirts and hats and codes for in-game items and all sorts of swag for fans of Blizzard games. So
that is awesome.
Be there. Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun.
Morheim has said there will be a BlizzCon in 2013.
I don't know if he's... Yeah,
I read an interview yesterday where he said, yeah, we're pretty sure we're going to bring it back. We just had to concentrate on the games this year.
And it makes a lot of sense why they're doing it. And we'll probably talk a bunch about that on Saturday as well, because there's, you know, this was the year if they were going to miss, this would have been the year to miss. They had a lot going on and it made a lot of sense. But it's going to be a load of fun. We can't wait to see people there. We'll have a big chat room full of people, live call-ins, all that stuff. So come join us, won't you?
And follow Scott Johnson on Twitter at Scott Johnson.
Yeah, easy enough, right? It's my name, dang it. Don't wear it out.
Don't wear it out. That's it for this episode of Tech News Today. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call. Leave us a voicemail. Our phone number is 260-TNT-SHOW. It's Friday tomorrow, so there is a good chance of Darren Kitchen. We'll see you then.